The following Art Trap production is brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by donations from listeners like you.
But Tom Baker was never on my list. It was on Jason's, top of Jason's list. I was never fussed about working with Tom Baker because I thought I'd seen Tom enough, I'd known Tom enough, I'd done Destiny of the Doctors with him, and I thought he is never going to want to do this because he's not going to want to revisit Doctor Who. It's just not where he is. But Jason, bless him, kept trying, and we would talk at conventions now and again, and Tom would always say no. And we sent him, remember, we sent him some scripts, and...
Are we going to get rain?
Can you believe it's raining?
There's a nice big umbrella behind you.
Yes, roll that baby out.
And so we spoke to Tom a couple of times, and we sent him scripts, and famously at a convention once, he talked about this on stage, and we'd sent him Holy Terror, Stones of Venice, and Spectralania Moore. And he said this on stage at a convention, and he said, and I did what I thought was the best thing to do. I let them slide off my knee and end up in the bin. And I just thought that was really mean and unnecessary, Tom. You did not have to say that at a convention. It got him a huge load of laughs and everything like that. But I just thought that was a little bit mean. And after that, I said, let's never bother with Tom again. It's just not worth it. And indeed, the only time we then did go back to Tom was when we were doing Sharda. And we'd spoken to Lala and said, you know, what are you thinking? Do you think you want to do Sharda with Tom? And she was like, yeah, I'm up for that. That'd be a good laugh. That'd be great. But he didn't want to play ball on that either. He didn't want to do Sharda. It was just so obvious he never wanted to do anything. So then we said, right, let's do it with Paul. Let's put Paul and Lala together because they'd worked together before. They'd done, had we done Zagreus at that point? I can't remember which way around it had been.
Yeah.
I think we had done Zagreus. So he was up for it, and that's how we turned into Sharda.
We're trying to wet.
Because I'm not getting wet at all. You might be getting
just
wet.
Water.
I don't care if you're getting wet. I'm bone dry under this lovely
morning. How do you feel about this new thing that Tom is doing? Live from the Peculiar Pub, this is Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No.
You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep,
hello.
James Norton,
hello.
News,
fabulous.
Reviews,
oh no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you? Who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 162. My name is Ken Deep, alongside Mr. Lewis Trapani.
Hello, and also alongside the table, across the table from us, is Mr. Jules Burt and his new lovely wife, Wendy.
Hello.
They're joining us, and we are live from the DWNY meetup at the Peculiar Pub. It's September, 14th?
It's the 14th of September.
And you'll hear the noise in the background of people chatting it up, talking about Doctor Who.
We figured while the jukebox isn't playing and the live musicians here aren't here with their flutes, we can do some recording, and that's what we're doing. So we were here last month for Gary Russell, and we did part one of that interview, and we're going to be doing part two today. So it's only fitting that we're recording this right where, pretty much where we recorded our last interview in Manhattan.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We're back in the city, and we're having, ting the glasses here. We're doing a grand tradition of having a few tasty beverages while chatting it up and talking about our favorite topic, Doctor Who.
Yeah, so as you may or may not recall, Jules Burt was actually in Doctor Who. Out of all four of us here, he's the only one that's actually been in the proper program itself. He was in Rise of the Cybermen and Age of Steel, going back to 2006, May 2006 it was transmitted. But you actually shot that episode back in the fall of 2005.
In late November.
Late November. November.
Very cold, I seem to remember.
You have one of my favorite death scenes, by the way. Your death scene is a classic. Every time it comes on screen, I have to point and say, "There's Jewel!"
It is amazing how often that clip, that one death clip gets used. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't believe it myself. The following week, that was the first shot in Age of Steel, mm-hmm. it turns out. But the week that the show went out, the BBC did a Totally Doctor Who for the younger kids. Mm-hmm. They used it in that.
And you were in Confidential.
In Confidential it was used. Then at Christmas, there was a BBC Four programme on... time travel stroke return of realities. It was used in that. It was even used on BBC Doctor of the Proms. They mm-hmm. used the death scene.
Really?
It was used on ITV in an awards ceremony where they showed a clip of Doctor Who, the same death scene. Absolutely incredible. That just like one little clip. Mm-hmm. Yet no official stills were ever taken of it, you know? It's just what you see on the screen. I'm really gutted about that.
Well, since it's so widespread now, it's now more than ever, you have to come back. Because that was in Pete's world that you died.
Yes.
There's you, the photographer, in our world that's still
alive and well,
taking pictures.
Oh, yeah.
So Matt Smith needs to somehow encounter you once again.
That would be great, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, it would be too bad you're not doing an episode right now. We could reenact what we did. This episode of Dr. Potchak went out December 2005. I think even before David Tennant. Yeah, it was before David Tennant.
Before we even saw David
Tennant. I mean, we saw the regeneration, but we didn't see any full-fledged episodes of David Tennant.
We had the Barcelona bit, and that was it.
So you're a real big scoop for us.
Yeah.
And you're a scoop for us today, too.
Oh, brilliant. I remember I was doing some amateur dramatic. I was doing a panto at the time, traditional panto. And my agent had called me on the Friday, and I don't know what it was, but I just didn't say yes straight away. I'd been so wrapped up in doing that pantomime that I couldn't even think about it. On hindsight, I would have bitten her hand off. She phoned up, she knew how to handle a camera, and I said, photograph all the time. I didn't know it was going to be sort of a more old-fashioned one than a modern digital that I was used to. But, I then had to wait the entire weekend because I realised what I'd done by not saying that. Monday morning, 9 o'clock, it's the part's still there. Yeah, okay, George, you got it. And then literally, like, 2 days later, I was on the set. Just
fantastic.
Very, very lucky to get it. She could have so easily just phoned somebody else. I would have missed my chance, you know?
Now, you said at the time that you had to wait a little while. A little while has passed now, so are you on the horn with her?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm surprised you didn't maybe make a push for something like Torchwood. You know?
Well, about a year after the Doctor Who, I what happened, when I spoke to you guys, and when I was doing most of my acting, I was working from home, so I was flexible to... just to take the time off whenever I wanted. But now we have a young family, and I sort of had to get a proper job rather than this.
It's all your fault.
Well, no, but I had to get a proper job. So I went to... I get a job at Waterstones, the book people.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And took part time. In fact, just this last month, I've got my own branch now, so I'm a manager.
Great.
So, 3 years since you last spoke to me, I've gone through, got a manager. But that has meant that I've not really been able to do so much acting. But about a year after the Doctor Who gig, I was offered 4 or 5 days on Torchwood. And I'd spoken to my then boss, and she said, yeah, that was all, do you remember this? I said, what happened was, they got back to the costume and said, yeah, this guy's available, but they didn't have any costumes that would have fitted me. And I realised that the episode was the one when Captain Jack goes back to the 40s, and he's surrounded by all the RAF guys, which is one of my all-time favourite Torchwood episodes. And it was a week to work on the series, you know, so. Really, really good to
that. That's is that the one where he meets the real Captain Jack?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's a fantastic episode. It's one of the best, and that's a bit of a regret. A friend of mine lives just a couple of streets away from me. I've known since school. He's been on Torchwood twice now. just tiny little parts. And he was in Christmas Special as well. So he's done three.
Really?
Three, two tortures and a Doctor Who.
Wow. Yeah.
So you would come up with a little cold if you were suddenly offered a chance to return. I might not be feeling so good this week.
The thing is, I'm the boss now, so I can work the rotors around.
Okay.
But more often than not, certainly if it's anything, I was lucky in the part that I had a Doctor Who that was small. I didn't have to do an audition or anything. All I had to do was do a screen. And that was, I didn't go up to do that bit. When I was there, Graham Harper said, right, who wants to be killed by a cyber? And about two or three of us stuck our hands up. And, yeah, that sounds good. So, and they were looking at me for light and appearance and said, yeah, you'll be fine. So brilliant. And that was fantastic. Well, it was just me and the cyber actor. What's he called again? I always forget his name.
Paul Casey?
Paul Casey, yeah. It was just me and him and the entire crew for, I don't know, a couple of hours. And that was...
See, that was very smart of you to volunteer for that, because
always volunteer, right?
I mean, for a death scene, because that's the scene they show all the time. If you didn't die, you wouldn't have been shown all those sequences.
Yeah. It was just such good luck. And then in between, when they were setting it up, obviously I met Graham Harper 20 years ago at one of the various Doctor Who cons I went to, and I reminded him of this. And he was just such a friendly guy, and people were like chatting over TV, and he heard old TV, and he was like, because he was recounting how he worked with Douglas Camfield when he was learning his trade. And I think he was just more amazed that there was anybody on the set who knew about all that.
Yeah, it was geeked up about it.
And, you know, they just, all the runners in that, who were usually herding you around, they just left us to it, which is really nice, you know?
A little one-on-one.
I'm excited. If you phone me at 2 o'clock in the morning on this drive home, you've got me up, I've been killed by a cyber. I was like, have a sleep.
And did you say, that's great, honey, and hang up the phone?
Yeah.
didn't I call you from the set?
I'm excited.
And Billy Piper was here.
Oh, yes.
I was Billy Piper. And you were, that trip back after that first night, the second night was incredible, because I was on an incredible high, but it didn't finish till like 2 in the morning. I had to drive from Cardiff back to Plymouth, and it's only a couple of hundred miles, but I was really tired, although I was really bored out. So I'm looking at my map, my directions, I'm just driving quite slowly on the motorway, on the inside lane. The next thing I know, like the Sweeney, you probably know, you've heard of the Sweeney, you know, 70s police drama. They drove crazily in old Ford Capris. But the Sweeney and appears unmarked police car pull me over on the motorway. Oh my god, so I get out and they said, we've had reports of you dangerous driving. And they were looking in the car and I had to get out, and they checking I hadn't been drinking. I said, I was just looking at my map, maybe I was swerving. And I explained where I'd come from. He said, if you're too tired to be driving, we want you to book into a hotel. Follow me and we'll go to the hotel. So I followed the unmarked police to the Holiday Inn. Went into the Holiday Inn and they were full up. So I explained to them, I said, look, I've been a Doctor Who, and they were all rapt in attention. I said, oh, this is brilliant, this never happens to us, like the night crew, you know? So I said, look, if bringing out the coffee and that, so I drank it, and I said, if you don't mind, I'll just go and freshen it. I waited for like another hour to go by. And then I thought, right, I'm going to risk it. They're full of penny. And they gave me the directions to the Bristol. If you get stopped again, you can say, well, they were full up in Cardiff. This is the directions to the Bristol body, which is on the way home. So I'm driving along, I see the car that's pulled me over. It's on a bridge above the motorway, and I just carry on and pray it doesn't follow me. Nothing happens, right? So I get as far as Bristol, everything's fine, so I carry on driving. On the radio, I'm listening to 5 Live or Radio 2, in the middle of the night, this is, a question comes up. It's all still after the Doctor Who's had an incredible trip back. There's a question comes on, and the prize is to win David Bowie's entire back catalogue on CD. It's like 40-odd albums. It's like, wow. And I know the answer to this question, right? So I've got to pull it up, right? Phone up, I got through, which was the most amazing thing. You never get through on that quiz. She says, well, you're right. Yeah, it was something to do with creation, I would say, the primary screams. She says, you're right, but you're the second person.
Oh, no.
I said, you wouldn't believe where I've come from. So I carry on listening, and they said, oh, and we've got our winner, and they go live to some Milkman. He says, yeah, I'm delivering my... It was the most poor impression. I'm delivering around, yeah. So you, I thought it was that answer, yeah. I would have been so more animated.
Yeah, of course.
It was their last level answer.
So you just got killed by a Cyberman, you're saying?
Exactly, right, exactly.
See, we know better on Dr. Potchok. Yeah. We don't interview those folks. We interview you.
I'm not talking to the milkman.
So anyway, I seem to remember getting home after that amazing trip, but I don't know what time we got in. 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And then talking for the next 5 hours because I was so excited.
I remember it well because I didn't sleep.
But it was a really, really...
So you've known Jules for some years now?
We met just before Doctor Who, didn't we? It's about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Around that time.
Well, we've just got around to getting married.
So you're here on your honeymoon. You took a few minutes out to come and stop by the TWNY meetup. That's absolutely fantastic.
Well, we don't know anybody else in New York, so we had to ask you guys.
Well, you're amongst, friendly folks here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we, as I said, we've been really ticking off the old tourist attractions left, right, and centre the last couple of days. So
yeah, you were at the Statue of Liberty today, or
did that today?
We
went to the island.
They sold out.
Oh, they sell out! Wow,
it was really busy. Yeah,
yeah,
but we had a good look around Ellis Island. Not much longer than
I was there today. Once, like in 1980, and that was when they allowed you up in the crown.
Yeah.
I went up. I think they only recently opened up the crown again because after September 11, 2001, they closed off the crown.
The security, since I was last here, it was a few months before 9/11 last time I was here. Yeah. And everything's changed, you know. I mean, absolutely everything. Yeah. Airport style security, all the major attractions now. Plus, the prices have doubled or more since then, you know.
Well, we have some background music. So, you know what? Why don't we throw to the second part of the Gary Russell interview, and we'll be right back on Dr. Who Podcast.
We want to thank Barnaby Edwards, who made possible the Gary...
the other Barnaby Edwards.
The other Barnaby Edwards from TWNY, who... thanks to him, we were able to get this interview with Gary Russell. So,
and also, Gary Russell was added to the guest list at Chicago TARDIS in November.
Yes, so he'll be there if you had... if you haven't seen him before, well, even if you have seen him before, another chance for you to see him again.
All right, fair enough. All right, we'll be right back with Gary Russell, part two.
This is Paul Cornell, and you're listening to Podshock.
You have heard us mention it before. If you love Doctor Who Podshock and you also love British science fiction, be sure to subscribe to our other podcast we do, The Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi. That's right. Ken, James, and myself team up as we do here in Doctor Who Podshock, but this time we paint with a much broader palette covering all British science fiction. Everything from Blake 7 to Torchwood to The Prisoner, UFO, Space 1999, The Thunderbirds, Tripods, Day of the Triffids, Sarah Jane Adventures, Red Dwarf, War of the Worlds, Tomorrow People, even Doctor Who, you name it, if it's British and it's science fiction, we try to cover it. Find it on iTunes or go to hitchhikersguidetobritishscifi.com or arttrap.com for show listings and RSS feeds. The Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi. And now we pick up where we left off last time with our interview with Gary Russell.
And after that, I said, let's never bother with Tom again. It's just not worth it. And indeed, the only time we then did go back to Tom was when we were doing Sharda. And we'd spoken to Lala and said, you know, what are you thinking? Do you think you want to do Sharda with Tom? And she was like, yeah, I'm up for that. That'd be a good laugh. That'd be great. But he didn't want to play ball on that either. He didn't want to do Sharda. It was just so obvious he never wanted to do anything. So then we said, right, let's do it with Paul. Let's put Paul and Lala together because they'd worked together before. Had we done Zagreus at that point? I can't remember which way around it had been.
Yeah.
I think we had done Zagreus. So he was up for it, and that's how we turned into Sharda.
There's the leg of the table.
Yeah, we're
are you getting wet? Because I'm not getting wet at all. You might be getting wet. Water. I don't care if you're getting wet. I'm not wet. I'm bone dry under this lovely awning.
How do you feel about this new thing that Tom is doing for BBC now? They're essentially taking the Big Finish concept, and they threw probably a bucket of money.
I honestly don't know. My involvement with that in my job at Cardiff was to approve the scripts, to approve the idea in the first place, and I thought, good on Michael Stevens at BBC Audio. He's pulled it off where many others have tried and failed. So, yes, I hope it's a big success for him. It's Paul Miles is writing the script, so they're going to be good. Well, they are good. I've read them all. So that's quite good. To me, that's a good combination. The insanity that is Paul Miles and the insanity that is Tom Baker. I think, you know, it can't help but succeed.
Do you think it maybe he may change his mind and come to Big Finish?
No, I don't.
One of the things that drew me to...
That's what I think. That's not to say that's not going to happen. Yeah, no, but my guess would be, no, that is not going to make him suddenly go, yes, I want to go and play the Doctor for Big Finish now.
I think Paul McGann being part of Big Finish was the thing that drew me first to the book. I thought it was a fascinating idea because Doctor Who really is a radio play on television.
Yes.
There's a whole lot of... Doctor, what is that? Well, it's green, it's got one eye, it's very descriptive in its dialogue, and it had to be in the early days because the budget was limited. But when I always felt that we didn't have enough Paul McGann. I think that you won a lot of fans over, people like myself, who said, damn, this guy got the short end of the straw, and now I'm going to get to hear his Doctor. I'm going to get to explore it more.
Hmm.
Was there a checklist of things that you wanted to do with his Doctor?
Yes, Dalek Cybermen and Nick Courtney. So I threw them all through Daleks and Nick Courtney in that first season. I thought, if we only get one bite of the cherry with Paul... Then I didn't want... Daleks actually didn't fuss me that first year, but I thought it had to be Cybermen, and I had to get Courtney in there. Because if Paul does those first four and then goes, you know what, I don't want to do any more, I've hated this. And the happiest day of my Big Finish life was the Friday at the end of that first session. We'd just done half of Minuet in Hell, because we did the second half without Paul in London. But we did the first half of that on that Friday, and it was like Nick finished directing... And we all sat there and we looked at each other and went, we've done it. And we said to Paul, look, I know you don't like having your photograph done. Me, Jason and Nick were just like one of ourselves with you. And he went, yeah, of course, that's fine. I think Jack Rayner was there as well, and she wanted one of just her and Paul. And he was like, yeah, let's go and do them. We did it outside. And as we stood there, as we walked out, and Nick and Jason were already outside, as we walked out, I was with Paul. And Paul said, so, have you booked the studio for the next lot then? And I just thought, we've done it. We've won him over. We've done
it.
That's
great.
And as we stood by the photograph, I said, Nick, Jason, McGann wants to do more. And they were like, yes, we've succeeded. And there you go. It's been, you know, brilliant ever since.
I mean, we appreciate it. Without that, it would just be the TV movie.
Right.
So it really fleshed out the Paul McGann era. When we review the Paul McGann era, we always include the Big Finish audio dramas because that's the bulk of his era.
Yes. Yeah. And...
You
and
actually make more of a distinctive
it.
Doctor. He's the one Doctor that's really genuinely represented by the audios as opposed to his TV movie.
Well, the great thing about everything we did with McGann, and I can only talk about Big Finish up until mid-2006. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't dream of just ever trying to anticipate what was in Nick's mind as producer. But from my point of view, what I was able to do with the McGanns, which I couldn't do with Colin, Sylvester and Peter, was... I was playing in a sandpit with them, with their characters, their companions, that you picked up, gave a good shake to, and you had to put back where you found them.
Mm-hmm.
With Paul and with Charlie, and then later with Kerry's, we were in a situation where we'd go, we can do anything with these people. There's no end point. Because there was no TV series at that point, Jews come back. It was like, we could kill Charlie, we could kill Kerry's, we could marry them off, we could have the Doctor married, we could do anything with the Doctor. We could put him into an alternate universe he could never come back from. All these things were open to us that weren't open with the other three Doctors. And that was very, very freeing.
That liberty is still there because we never seen Paul McGann regenerate to the Ninth Doctor. So you don't know where he was at that point where he did regenerate. So you can go anywhere.
It's limitless.
Any companion.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I have to say in the current, this past year, I mentioned this on a previous Pod Shock only a couple of weeks ago. I'm also very impressed with the current run with Big Finish, of doing things like the old stage plays. And you were mentioning nostalgia. Those things are things that would have been lost to American fans. who would never have seen or had any understanding of the seven keys to Doomsday or the ultimate adventure, anything like that. So thumbs
and
up
those,
to them.
And
now.
Those missing Colin Baker stories.
Yeah,
so, well, you see, this is where, you know, Nick and I diversify. I mean, Nick and I diversified on a number of points at Big Finish, but that is one very big one. I'm glad you like them. I would never have done them when I was there.
And why?
Because I think everything with Big Finish was about going forward.
Okay.
And I wasn't interested in taking scripts that had been written and never made on TV or stage plays or anything like that. And I would be going, why waste your time doing that when we could be going forward and trying new things? But bless Nick, he's gone, this is a great idea, and he's made it work, and it's been hugely successful. And I think that's what's good about having a change of producers in these things. Because if you're stuck with my opinions and my regime for another 8 years, I think Big Finish would have died on his ass. But because I left and someone else took over who was as inventive, if not more inventive with it, then it keeps going. And now they've just had their license renewed to 2011.
Yeah.
That means Big Finish will have run for 11 years. How scary is that? I have obviously arranged to have Nick assassinated so that he can never get to be producer for 8 years, because that's just not on. No one can produce Big Finish longer than I did.
No, they have to eat.
At 7 years, they either have to leave, or I'm afraid Logan's Run style, I send people out to hunt them down and get rid of them.
Carousel.
Absolutely.
Now, talk about the transition into the new show.
Yeah.
Everybody that we talk to that has a history with Doctor Who prior to the show, whether it be Paul Cornell or anybody involved in the show, the question is always that the phone call. So your experience with the phone call, the show's coming back.
It happened twice. I had a birthday party for my 40th birthday, which was in September that year. And one of my friends at my party came up to me and said, I've got the best birthday present for you. I went, really? What? Oh, good. He said, Doctor Who's coming back. And from a number of people saying that to me, I'd have gone, yeah, right. From this person saying it to me, I knew it was true. And it was the worst birthday present I could ever have had. Because my reaction, I turned to Jason, who was standing beside me at the time, and said, that's Big Finish dead. And Jason was, no, it'd be brilliant. We'll be able to capitalize on the success. There'll be a whole influx of new people.
Sure.
I said, no, they won't. I said, no one who's watching Doctor Who on television is ever going to need a load of audio plays or books about old Doctor Who's. I said, this will kill us and it'll kill BBC Books. And I'm a bit of a Cassandra and a doomsayer and things like that, but I firmly believe that. And I was right, because when that series was announced, and it was announced, I think, October, so it's a couple of weeks after my birthday.
'03.
Suddenly, our main sort of, with three big bursts at Big Finish of resubscriptions, one of which is in January. And that following January 2004, our subscriptions went from 3,500 to about 1,000. Because people went, there's a new series coming, we don't need Big Finish anymore. And it took about 2 years to start recovering from that. And when I left Big Finish, it still hadn't recovered completely. It has now, because what Nick's done has brought people back into it. But I really was of the opinion that a new series would absolutely kill Big Finish and BBC Doctor Who books. And sadly, I was right. It really damaged us. And to all intents and purposes, yeah, it did lead to the end of the BBC books. I mean, they were already winding down, because I think we'd actually taken quite a slice of their market as well. I mean, they were down, I think, with the exception of, you know, books by people like Lance and things, they were pretty much only printing 3,000 copies of each novel they were printing, which is not enough to even make them break even. So they were already looking for an excuse to possibly lessen them or get rid of them, and here it was on a plate from Russell T. Davies. Hi!
Well, the other stumbling block is that Big Finish was limited to just the classic Doctors, so you couldn't even incorporate a current Doctor to do a crossover type of thing.
Yeah.
No, and that was made very clear to us when that announcement happened. Was, yeah, and by the way, don't think your license is classic series, it's not new series. What was lovely was about a week and a half after that, probably 2 weeks after, because it had been the beginning of October, I'm sitting at my desk at Big Finish doing something or other, and the phone rings, and it's Russell, saying, hi Gary, it's Russell Davies here, just to let you know, because I think I owe it to you to let you know, there's going to be an announcement on Friday about the news. He didn't know I already knew about the return of Doctor Who. And I was like, fantastic, great, well done. I'm so pleased it's you. I'd known Russell not personally. No, I'd been trying to get him to write to me for more years than I care to remember. But we knew each other through email and things like that, and we'd been quite chatting. We met at a couple of things in Manchester a couple of times and been quite matey, and I love him. I love him as a writer, and I loved him as a person. So I was really chuffed he phoned up. And of course, he'd done the introduction to Ben Cook's big book for us at that point as well. And he was like, you know, I hope it doesn't damage Big Finish. He said, I really just want to thank you. He said, without you, without Big Finish, I would have had a harder job convincing the BBC to bring it back. The fact that there was this drama stuff going on, and your writers, and some of whom I'm going to steal off you, and blah, blah, blah. And it was a lovely conversation to have with him. And I felt, at that, I felt, oh, Russell T. Davies has phoned me up. It was really nice. And then it happened, and Big Finish kept going, and blah, blah, blah. And then one day, out of the blue, I got a phone. I'd been to a couple of parties, I think, or launches. No, I've been to a launch, that's right. Been to the launch for episode 13 at BAFTA, and then Doctor Who Confidential had some kind of party in London, and I went along to that and I met all of those people. And I was just, you know, that Big Finish person who'd given them Rob Shearman, and, you know, I mean, obviously he already knew Cornell, but, you know, it was nice. And I got chatting to Gillan from Doctor Who Confidential, and we got on really well. And about a year after that, David had just been announced, which I kind of knew before anyone else did, because obviously I knew David, and had sussed, he'd never said anything, I'd sussed something about a reaction he'd given to a comment we'd made when we were making the unit series, and I thought, oh, it's you! You're fucking doctor, aren't you? You bugger. And you're not going to say anything, are you? And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I thought, okay, not going to say a word to any of these people, because that's not fair on you, is it? But you've got the job you've wanted all your life. So happy for David. Anyway, I then got this phone call from BBC Books saying they wanted to do a making of Doctor Who book, and Gillan from Doctor Who Confidential had put me forward as a good writer for it. So I went up and met them, and it was all fine and fantastic, and I started going up to Cardiff and interviewing people and everything. And then one day, I just happened to say to Russell, you know, if ever you need another script edited on the show, I'm your man, and I know all about licensing, so I could look after the licensing side, because I know that Helen and Simon at that time were doing, they hated it. They absolutely hated this whole thing of having to read the novels and approve comic strips, and it's a huge part of the job and gets in the way of actually doing your job. And I thought, well, I understand licensing. I know what you need. I know what can and can't be got away with. I understand Doctor, you know, I just sold myself to him. And he went, yes, yes, patted me on the head, sent me away. Thank you very much, Gary. I'm going to drink coffee alone now. Please, someone get this man out of BBC Cardiff. And that was that. And I went back to Big Finish. And I think on the Friday after that, the phone rang at Big Finish. And it was this man I'd never heard of from BBC Wales saying, oh, hi, it's Matt Bush here, head of drama development. Russell and Julie have just said that you're quite interested in script editing on Doctor Who. And I was like, yes, thinking, I've never heard of this person. I'm going to have to look him up on the internet and find out if he's real. And he said, look, he said, next time you're in Cardiff, come and say hello. It'd be good to meet you and, you know, see what Russell and Julie are thinking of. And I went, well, I'm in on Monday. I'm coming out to interview someone at 2:00. He said, oh, well, do you mind coming in at midday? And I went, yeah, that's fine. And I went in and I met this guy, Matt, and we got on like a house on fire and chatting away. And he was saying, tell me about Big Finish. You know, what does it do? I've heard about it. And Russell and Julie are very fond of it. And Phil Collinson thinks it's brilliant. And they buy all the CDs. And indeed, they're all lined up in the office and everything. And I'm like, ooh, wow, that's nice. And we just chatted, and at the end of it, he turned around and said, so, when can you start? And I went, was this a job interview? And he said, well, it wasn't when it started, but it might as well be by the time we finished. And I went, well, I'm kind of committed to Big Finish, and 2 weeks? And he went, yeah, that would be good. And I said, look, the only thing I'll have to say is, for at least the first 6 months, I need to see some projects through. And we were talking at that point of being a three-day-a-week job. So it was a bit of script editing and mainly doing the clearances for Worldwide and everything. And he said, yeah, that's fine. Finish off all your Big Finish stuff. If it takes 6 months, it takes 6 months. So I then went into Cardiff Town Centre and I phoned up my ex, who has always been my guru on everything. And I went, I've just been offered a job. And he went, oh, right, where? And I went, script editing on Doctor Who. And he went, and you're phoning me to say? And I went, well, what do I do? And he said, I think the word is yes. I said, well, I think I might have got that in the conversation somewhere, but I might have sort of swamped it under a whole load of, but what about Big Finish? What about books? What about blah, 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 blah? And Ainsworth just went, oh, God, just take the job. And I went, okay. And then I said, how am I going to tell Jason? At which point John just goes, that's not my problem. Good luck with that one. Bye. Click. So I then went home that night, went back to London, and phoned Jason on Saturday morning and said, I've got some news. And Jason went, Ross has offered you a job, hasn't he? And I went, yeah. And Jason went, fantastic. When do you start? I went, 2 weeks Monday. And Jason was like, oh, okay. Okay, that's a bit of a quick turnaround, isn't it? And I went, don't worry. I will stay on everything. I'm down to direct, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I was doing the Janet Fielding one. I thought, no way I'm letting that one go. And I was doing I, Dav, Ross. So we just started pre-production on that, getting the scripts ready and everything. So I said I was going to see all of those things through. And what I actually planned to do was work up to Nocturne was going to be my last one. As it turned out, that never happened. And I think my last one properly was Year of the Pig. Although the previous one to that, which was Martin Day's World War One story, was actually more overseen by Ainsworth than it was by me. And that was it. I suddenly was in the position of, after 8 years, going, I've been freelance for 8 years, but at the same time as a freelancer being in this lucky position of always knowing what I was doing, I was in charge, I was king of everything, no one could argue with me. And Nick tried many times, but no one could argue with me. And suddenly I was going up to Cardiff to be the tiniest, tiniest minnow in this ocean of brilliance. And still the best move I've ever made.
So we were very happy. When we reported the news, we were very pleased and happy for you. So, fantastic news there.
Well, thank you. I bet you weren't as pleased and happy as I was.
It just seemed almost like a natural.
It just seemed very natural.
It really didn't to me. Normally, we would soften you up at the start of an interview and say that during those wilderness years, your efforts between editing a magazine and helping create Big Finish and things like that are instrumental to Doctor Who fans. Without that, it would have been a complete void. You said it yourself about the magazine continuing. There was a possibility that it may not have continued. The movie didn't do what
it should have done.
What it should have done, and then there was nothing. And you did have you had book deals that were some book companies that were going to be a little bit iffy. They didn't know where they were going to go, and maybe the sales weren't the way they thought of. And then out comes a risk like Big Finish, and now it's looked back on as like, oh, that just seemed totally natural.
That's incredibly nice of you to say that, but I got to say that if it hadn't been me, it would have been someone. Because Jason would always have wanted to do it. Nick probably would have wanted to do it. And so I was lucky that I probably had a bit more oomph and could kick Jason's backside now and again. But actually, Big Finish probably would have happened without me. You know, in the grand scheme of things, me personally, as a human being, is not very important. You know, I was lucky. I wasn't particularly talented or skilled. I was just lucky that I was in the right place at the right time and able to do these things and have, frankly, lived off the kudos of this ever since. But, you know, if it hadn't been me writing that book, the inside story for BBC Books, it would have been someone else, and they would be a script editor probably now. You know, I don't believe that I'm anything special. I think it's just, if you're in the right place, there. I'm a great believer in not fate per se, because I don't believe in predestiny, but I think things happen to people because they're in the right place at the right time and all the dominoes fall down and fit it the right way. And I just happened to be in the middle of a particular maelstrom and I was the one that got the Big Finish gig and then got the Doctor Who gig.
In those initial year prior from the announcement by Russell to Rose airing, inside were you ever like, oh, I hope he asked me to do something? Was there ever a thinking like that? Or based on what you're saying, you're talking, you're sounding extremely humble about the whole thing, but it had to be part of you inside it. It's like, pick me. You
know, because
this wasn't your master plan.
No.
Because I'm going to start Big Finish and then eventually...
Absolutely. Because in my head, I would have been going, seriously, that would never have crossed my mind. And now I can say in all honesty, it never did cross my mind. Because I was just thinking about that question, I just think, why on earth would I be someone that they would think twice about? No, it just wouldn't have happened. So no, all I was thinking about in that year was, frankly, on a selfish level, was how badly is this going to affect Big Finish, and am I going to have a job in a year's time? And what I was actually, to be honest with you, my main thought during that year was how brilliant Rob Shearman's got a writing gig on television doing redoing Jubilee as Dalek. Actually, that was the thing I was proudest of, really, was that Rob Shearman was doing that, and Nick Briggs was playing the bloody Daleks. How brilliant was that? I knew about that before Nick did. The only reason I knew about that was because Russell asked me for his phone number. And so I thought, I know what you're looking for him for, aren't you? That was brilliant. Nick Briggs got to play the voices after all these years, going through audio visuals on amateur level, and then Big Finish, playing the Dalek voices. And there was never any hesitation in Russell or Julie or Phil Collinson's mind. Nick was always going to be the Dalek voices right for the word go.
Nick Briggs is on camera. You can see him in Torchwood, Children of Earth.
Now, and isn't he brilliant? And isn't he very scary?
Yes. Absolutely. But now you've done some, before all this, you did some on-screen appearances as an actor as well.
I did when I was very young.
So now, will we ever see you on Doctor Who?
No.
Sarah Jane?
Sadly, you have to have an equity card these days to do walk-on. Actually, that's not true. There's quite a few members of the production team. I do sometimes watch an episode of Doctor Who and go, that's Tracy, that's Ginny, what are you doing there in that scene? And that's Sam, why is he standing there looking at a big screen of John Sim? I would love to. To be honest, if I was ever going to be in something in Doctor Who, what I would want more than anything is actually I want to be buried under prosthetics. I want to be sent down to Millennium and have someone do a face cast of me. And
Zorbala.
Absolutely. Well, yes, actually, yes. Zorbala would be quite right. No, I want to. I'd love to be under prosthetics. I think that would be brilliant. I have no great desire. I said to Russell once, what was it we were doing? Oh, it was when they were doing a scene for David's Last Story. And Edward Russell, who's also no relation to me, but is one of our senior brand people, and I were talking. And we said to Russell, come on, shove us in that scene. Go on, we could just be in the background of that scene. Says Russell, run away. So no, I don't think you'll ever see me on screen. I did. After all this time of being up there, I've had so many false starts because I was originally going to script edit Sound of Drums and Last of the Time Lords. Then I was going to do The Next Doctor. And for various reasons involving other stuff and Sarah Jane, I took over with Sarah Jane with Series 2. And... Which was an accident because Lindsay, the previous script editor, had gone off on another job, which then fell through. She came back, and it was like, which one shall I give up? Do I keep Sarah Jane, which was hers, but she gave to me, and that's an entire series that I will see through, or do I give up the two episodes of Doctor Who? And I thought, I'll give her back two episodes of Doctor Who and The Next Doctor, and I'll hang on to Sarah Jane, thank you very much, because that's then something I can work on and shape, and we wholly me. And it's been like that ever since. But I did keep saying to Russell and Julie, I want to do one Doctor Who. Just before you leave, I want to do one Doctor Who. And then when Phil Ford was going to write Waters of Mars, and I work very well with Phil, and we're great mates, and he's just brilliant. And I think he made it quite clear he quite liked me to be his script editor on Waters of Mars. And then Russell said, yeah, just do the last three. And I thought, fantastic. I finally get to work on Doctor Who, and I get to work on the three best Doctor Whos ever. I write on the last David Tennant. I mean, God, it's fantastic to know that my name is going to be on the end credits of three consecutive brilliant episodes of Doctor Who. That is so exciting and so much of a... I can't explain how exciting.
How much David has really inhabited this role. I mean,
he's fantastic. He's never put a foot wrong. And I've said this to people before, but happily saying, I've known David longer than he's been Doctor Who.
And he's been in a lot of Big Finish.
Indeed.
For you.
And he's lovely, and he is the same man today that he was when he came in and did Colditz for me. It hasn't changed him. It hasn't changed him in any way. It's probably exhausted him, maybe slightly aged him, but as a human being, as a man, he is still the nicest, kindest, most quiet, humble, just genuinely lovely man that he always was. It just hasn't changed him at all.
Do you think there's the role of the Doctor, some kind of magic that goes on there, that when an actor becomes this like being told you're suddenly the Pope, and then you suddenly go to this holy status? Do you think that happens with something?
I think
like
it's a horrible comparison, but hi, Doctor Who or the Pope?
Well, which is more believable?
Doctor Who. I'd rather be Doctor Who than the Pope any day.
Same here.
In other words, I don't know. I remember Tom Baker saying once it was act-proof, and I think that's probably still quite true. But I think there's today there's a huge entourage. Is that the right entourage? Isn't the right word? That sounds like people. There's a huge. There's more than just playing a part, you know. When Tom and Peter and Colin and Pertwee and all these people, they just went every day and they made Doctor Who and then they went home in the evening. That was the end of it. And occasionally they might go and open a fete somewhere and sign an autograph in a bookshop. Someone playing Doctor Who today, playing the part is the easy part, bit. Yeah. You know, it's the fact that your life changes, that you no longer have a life. And I think that's where David has been brilliant, in that he's ensured that he still has a life. He doesn't court publicity. You don't see him in the tabloids. You don't see him going to nightclubs and all this sort of stuff. He's very shrewd and very smart and knows what he's doing. And that's why I think it hasn't changed him. I think if David had started going out with the glitterati and being a celeb, then that would have been a very different man
getting
to the one
he is. Getting into a Ferrari nightclub or something.
Never going to happen with him. He's just too nice.
You've had a peek at Matt Smith, I imagine. Now, at first I was mistaken that you... Not that kind of peek.
That's an interesting way of looking. I've had a peek at Matt Smith.
Well, at this table, only one person has had any...
Yes, I've met Matt. I have met Matt. I have done a read-through with Matt.
Did you see his audition tape?
No.
That blows that question for me, because I would have sworn that you would have seen it at this point. No. At first, I thought we were misinformed that you were script editing on some of these episodes, but you're not.
I'm my choice, I have to say. I had the opportunity to work on Series 5, or Series 1, as we now call it, and I chose not to because I wanted to just focus on Sarah Jane. And that was, you know, there's something about being able to take a whole series and with a producer, shape it, run it, deal with all the writers, and being across that. And on something like Sarah Jane, which is 12 episodes, that's a big show. It takes a lot of time and a lot of work, and it just wouldn't have been practical to try and fit in a Doctor Who as well. Yes, of course I'd love to do a Doctor Who. Of course I'd love to script edit something with Matt and Karen in. They're both lovely. I say, we did a read-through very early on, which was just for Matt and Karen, not the official read-through of all the other actors. We read through the first six scripts in a day with them, and I was one of the people there, along with two or three other, you know, producers and casting people, who were reading in all the other parts. And I got to be lots of sort of monsters and lots of characters and things like that, sitting next to Matt Smith and looking at him and him acting Doctor Who at me. And I'm thinking, yeah, life's pretty good, isn't it, really? This is quite nice. But, you know, that is nice. But I'm quite happy not to actually leave Brian and Lindsay to do Doctor Who, and I'll stick to Sarah Jane for now.
There's no way in a million years I would ever ask you about the current series, because it's a big taboo. But give us you got a chance to sit there, and there's concern. You read things on the internet. Oh, is he too young? Is he this? Is that? You've had a chance to see him be doctorly. Is he the doctor?
Yes.
Does it feel right?
Yes.
You, as someone who's followed the show, going back to William Hart.
Of course, he's brilliant. I mean, sorry, I didn't think you were going to ask me a question as easy to answer as that. Yes, he's fantastic. And so is Karen. They are both knockout. Karen is amazing. Matt is just inspirational. You know, I don't think there's I can so see when Stephen says, and he's quite honest, when he says, you know, Matt walked in the door and we found our doctor.
Yeah.
I thought, I sat down next to that man for a day, listening to him play the doctor, going, yeah, this just feels completely comfortable. This feels like he's been doing this for years.
Yeah, I think once his episodes are out, it will alleviate all these concerns that fans may have.
Fans don't have all these concerns. Three or four people have these concerns,
exactly.
And it gets multiplied, and people go, oh, yeah, I suppose that I'd never thought of that before, but now you've said it, I'm going to agree with that as well. He's too young,
he's just a few years younger than Peter Davison was,
you know, exactly.
When he took the role.
He's 3 years younger than Peter Davison, I think, or 4 years younger.
Who was
Big
a brilliant
deal.
Doctor.
Exactly, he's a fantastic doctor. And also, you know, someone who was 29 in 1981, a 25-year-old in 2010, anyway, is pretty much equivalent to that. Yeah. We all, you know, everyone matures a lot faster these days. And,
sure.
And Matt's got plenty of experience. He's not exactly, you know, an ingenue where it comes to acting. So, yeah, I have very little time for people who sit on the internet and whinge about things that they haven't seen yet, they don't know anything about. They speak from this marvellous level of ignorance. And you think, they're only saying all these things because they can, because the internet gives them that opportunity to kick
no
off.
No editor.
Exactly. I believe, right, here's my nerdish philosophy on life, excuse me. I think that if the internet, if forums worked, if I ran a forum, this is why I should never run a forum, because I'd be a dictator, I would say everyone posts whatever they want, but it don't go up for 24 hours. And in that 24 hours, you have the chance to rethink all those things you said. And I guarantee that 75% of the people that posted something would actually then come back within that 24 hours and rewrite it and say something different. And most of them would actually cancel what they said. And I think if all forums worked on a 24-hour delay, you'd get a lot more honesty and you get a lot more intelligence from people.
Thinking the thought through rather than
thinking it through. Because at the moment, everything is knee-jerk and suddenly it's up there. Yeah. And I know loads of people that have written things on forums, used to write an outpost Gallifrey or whatever, and they'd be going, oh, why did I say that? Yeah. Why? It's not what I meant. Oh. And if you had a chance to think about it, it would be different.
It's so immediate. People want to jump the gun and get out there as soon as possible and beat everyone else to the chase.
Put a 24-hour delay on it, and I think the internet would be a much happier, much nicer place. There you are. The world according to Gary Russell, age 46, a miserable old codger.
Wrapping up our time with you, being that we are moving off to the DWNY meetup.
Hooray!
Which is always wonderful. This is your second, I think, right?
Nope. No, it's my first. My first.
No.
Never done this before. I've no idea what to expect. Because I browbeat Barnaby so much that he actually gave me Tony Lee's. Tony got his, because Tony came and did this in February, I think.
Yeah, we were here.
And was that was before Gallifrey?
It was just a week before Gallifrey.
So Tony had his, so he brought it to Gallifrey, and I'd made such a song and dance about not having a mug that Barnaby stole Tony's off him. And Barnaby didn't tell me this. Barnaby said, no, look, I brought you one. You made such a fuss about it on the net. I brought you one. And Tony said to me on the way home that night, he went, yeah, it's mine. You got my mug. He nicked it back from me. It has pride of place. I collect mugs. I'm a real idiot. And my drawers and cupboards at home are full of character mugs, things relating to TV shows. I a real hard fight today in the NBC store. There's a beautiful red house mug. And I was like, I don't know. I've got to stop this addiction. Because usually I'll go to the NBC store or the CBS store. I'll spend a fortune on mugs. Especially if they're ones that change picture in the heat.
Like the TARDIS disappearing one.
Exactly.
Oh, of course.
I love things like that. I love
thermal
things like
mugs.
That.
Yeah, the thermal mugs.
I'm a sucker for things like that.
So we're only a month or two away from Sarah Jane
Series 3. Yep.
Which is your baby now.
Yep.
You said you got a chance to see this one through. And as of today on the internet, as of the day we're recording, which today is what, today's the 19th of August, the episode titles and writers hit the internet.
I didn't realize they hadn't already, actually.
As official as they are going to make it, came out today, and you have some spectacular writers, and it's not a secret that David Tennant's making an appearance in this series. Russell dropped the bomb on us, and I should have given a spoiler warning on that, but I didn't, that David's going to be in for a pair of episodes.
Yep, all Sarah Jane's are two-parters.
Yeah. Now, is it any coincidence that you're also script editing the last three David Tennants, and is there any connection, or is it strictly
That's completely a coincidence. I had nothing to do. I mean, obviously, when we were all talking about it at the beginning, we were like, what are we going to do in Series 3? And we just went, let's get David in. I remember last year, because I did Series 2 as well, and I remember reading all these things on the internet. This is why, folks, you should never believe people on the internet. People who said, David Tennant's filmed something for Series 2 as Sarah Jane. I think they also told us that Davros was in Series 2 as Sarah Jane as well. I love sitting there watching these things, and these people talking about it, and then, I've seen this, my friend works on the show and he's seen this, my friend says blah, blah. Just to say once and for all, it's complete nonsense. Yeah. None of these people's friends work on the show, because if they worked on the show, A, they wouldn't be talking about it, because they've got too much respect, and B, they're talking crap. Yeah. And every time you see a rumour about something that's in Doctor Who, something that's in Torchwood, something that's in Sarah Jane, 99.9% of it is nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's just people making it up, trying to make themselves look important on Outpost Gallifrey or Gallifrey Base or whatever. And it's very funny. And we sit and laugh at seeing people get worked up over things, just going, I don't know what you're getting worked up about. It's never going to happen. You're not going to see that happen. It doesn't exist.
We're waiting for Patrick Stewart to play the meddling monk, right?
Well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, we get this all the time.
It's actually happening. Quick, cross that one out. Yeah, but it does. And I love reading it. And so, yes, last year there were all these rumours that David had filmed, because somebody had been on set and they'd seen David filming it and they'd seen the scene with Davros being made and all this sort of stuff. And then when the shows, what annoys me is when the shows come out, they don't turn around on Outpost Gallifrey to the person that told them that at first and go, "You bloody liar." They then just believe the next thing they tell them. Yeah. And you think, stop believing these people. Yeah. It's all nonsense.
We get it all the time. People write to us and saying, "Oh, well, I got, you know, an inside scoop on this," and like, you know what, just take it with a grain of salt, because it's, you know,
an inside scoop all the time. Doesn't exist, because seriously, and anyone that works on that those shows wouldn't dream
and it's
of
always
spilling
Davros.
Stuff.
It always seems
everyone's obsessed with Davros, aren't they? Absolutely obsessed.
I mean, I think the IMDb had Davros in the season finale in every single...
I love the fact IMDb and Wikipedia that can just be updated by anyone.
Exactly.
And it's just full of nonsense. And then what I love more is the people on Outpost Gallifrey who go, "Well, it's been in the British press now, so it must be true. We were right all along."
Because they never lie.
They read Outpost Gallifrey, and that's where they get their stories from. Yeah. So the story you made up then appears in The Sun, and you're now saying it must be real, it's in The Sun. No, they got it off you, you fool. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so funny. We laugh so much about things like that. We had little competitions. It's like bingo. What can we see on Outpost Gallifrey today? Will they say this, this, and this? Will somebody decide that? Oh, look, there's somebody. Well, Davros has appeared. Tick on the bingo board. It's brilliant. So,
buy a round.
Yes. Yes. Drinking game for Gallifrey based people making up nonsense.
How do you feel about the new Canine series?
I think it's quite inventive and quite funny, and I look forward to seeing it. I like their new wacky canine design. I can't quite get my head around the fact that they filmed it in Australia with a load of Australian actors, but they're all putting on English accents and they're CGIing in English backdrops. I think if you're going to make it in Australia, which is obviously cheap and good, set it in Australia.
Yeah,
that would have been far more
it,
fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's not fair on actors, because they have, apart from doing all their acting with green screen and flying dogs and all this, particularly the kids, they've also got to remember to put on an English accent, which no Australian in the world can do that effectively, not over across the whole series. So, but bless. But I think it should be very good, actually. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
You you directed Infinite Quest.
I did.
The animated.
Now, and I've just done Dreamland as well.
That's the one with Georgia Moffat?
Yeah, that's the one with Georgia, yes.
So is what's the ETA on that? Like, what time?
End of this year. It's got to be between Waters of Mars and the finale.
That's sort of the thing that's going to keep us watching something between the two, between the stories. And how long does it run?
It is, at the moment, it's 7 6-minute episodes. That may change.
Right.
They may get longer, and it may be less episodes. May get more episodes, and they get shorter. Who knows?
The Big Finish thing kind of sets you up for that, because you start an animated with almost like an audio play, and then someone...
That's why I'm doing it. If I hadn't done Big Finish, I would never have got... I mean, you know, when we came to do Infinite Quest, Russell was like, "Well, the only person who's going to direct the audio of that is obviously you, because you've done it before." It's like, oh, gee, I'm going to direct something on BBC television. How cool. And now I'm doing it again with this. And I love it. I love doing the animations.
How did this come about? Especially that it doesn't feature a doctor, you know, it's not a traditional...
Yes, it does.
It does?
Yeah, David. David Tennant. He plays Doctor Who on television, and he plays Doctor Who in Dreamland.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the news came out, it was like, George is going to be in the thing, but she's not playing the doctor's daughter. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're...
David's in it. No. It's like Infinite Quest. It's a proper David story.
Proper
it's set
story.
Between Waters of Mars and the finale. It's all part and parcel of the grand scheme.
See, this is why we do interviews. You get to learn new things. I get to go home. I get to...
Ken, I hate to tell you, I think you're possibly the only person in the entire universe who doesn't think David Tennant's in Dreamland. I don't know how you got that impression. But, you know... You're mad.
That's good. Must be the heat.
No, it's David and Georgia, obviously. He's playing a character called Cassie, who's a beautiful girl who works in a diner in 1958 Nevada, and has a brilliant cast, actually.
Mayhem ensues.
I was working with Andy Pryor, who's our casting director, and he said, "Who do you want?" And I went, "Oh, I want Bum Bum Bum." And he went, "Yeah, all right, then let's get them." And we did. You know, lots of people I work with at Big Finish. Been my dream to find a part for Lisa Bauman, and succeeded doing that. Who else is in it? Peter Guinness, who is one of my favourite actors, is one of these beautiful, evil voices. I thought, let's get him to play a beautiful and evil voice character. David Warner, who is one of my heroes, and I did his first ever Big Finish, which was the second Unbound, and we got on very well. And I said to him, please, 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 please come and play in the animation. And he said, well, I don't want to play a villain. And I said, please, please, please come and play a villain in the animation. And he went, oh, well, it's for you. All right, then. So he's our big baddie. It's just brilliant, and we're seeing the animation come in weekly at the moment. In various, it starts off as we get sent storyboards, and then we see those storyboards sort of animated, and then we see 3D animations. It's all in black and white. They've got big triangles sticking out of their heads and lines pointing out eye lines, and then you see the first pass of the animation, and we make changes as it goes along and drive the animation company mad with our fiddling. Mm-hmm. But oh my god, it's going to look beautiful. It's just amazing. I've seen episodes 1 and 2 now, and they are stunning. And Little Loud, who are the company that have done the animation, have absolutely, they've just given 100%, they've given 600%. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of them have slept for about 4 months, but it's worth it. On screen, it's going to be brilliant. And yes, David Tennant's in it.
That's great.
Playing Doctor Who. TV's Doctor Who.
Well, he's worked with David Warner in that Unbound, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So this is not...
You try and imagine those two. I mean, they knew each other anyway. I mean, the reason that David Tennant was in David Warner's Unbound was, I can't think whether it was David Warner or whether it was Mark Gatiss who said to me, have we got a part for David Tennant in it? And I went, yes, he can play the bastard. He'll be good at that. They're old mates, you know. So, yes, they turn up at the studio together, and I'm going, right, can we record? Where are they? Oh, they're out there. rabbit. Yeah, guys, could you come in? Yes, we're just finishing an anecdote. Oh, well, that'll be another half an hour then. yes, that's great. But it's always good to do that, because if you can get people in who know each other and are quite matey, in audio, they're very, very relaxed, and it's great. So I lovely cast. Nicholas Rowe, who is an actor all my time at Big Finish, who I wanted to work with and was never able to get him. He was either never free or whichever agent he was with at that particular moment said he wouldn't do it or whatever. And so Andy Pryor suggested him actually for this part. And I went, yes, I wanted Nicholas Rowe for years. Let's get him in. He's another man with an amazing voice. He's not that well known, I don't think, over here. If you ever saw, Steven Spielberg did a movie many, many years ago called Young Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He was Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And he's a far older man, with the most sublimely beautiful, really low resonant voice, which on audio makes your skin crawl. Mm. And he's playing a goodie, but he's playing a goodie who's in a certain amount of pain. And you just sit, if you're crying, listening to him talking about things that happened to his wife, which is Lisa Bauman. And she knew him. It's like, of course she does. Lisa Bauman knows everybody. You walk into the room, hi everyone, this is Lisa Bauman. And they go, yeah, we all know Lisa. It's like, oh, fine. She's like, you know, it's not six steps from Kevin Bacon, it's 6 degrees of Lisa Bauman. But actually, everyone's just one away from Lisa Bauman. Or everyone has worked with Lisa Bauman at some point.
Yeah, it doesn't make for a very fun game when you're only one step away.
No. Oh, we had Clark Peters in it, who over here is known for The Wire.
Mm.
And Andy had said, oh, is there a part for Clark Peters to be good? And I'm ashamed to admit, I didn't know the name. But the voice he sent me, his voice, he said, oh God, he's so right for this part. Let's get him in, he'd be brilliant. And Andy's like, oh, that's really nice. And suddenly this man walks in and I'm going, you're Clark Peters. Now I know who you are. Oh my God. It's like him, David Warner, Nick Rowe, and just like, and Peter Guinness. It's just like, oh,
well, it's amazing that you don't have to sell actors, especially of these statures, on doing animation.
No. Well, it's not just doing animation. It's actually coming in for what it in real terms. It's actually quite small parts. You know, everyone did it in... I mean, Peter Guinness, I think, is in 5 scenes. Clark Peters is probably in 3. But yeah, they want to do it because it's Doctor Who. It's not because it's animation. They want to do it because it's Doctor Who. One of the people, when I was doing Infinite Quest, I don't think I'd be told off for saying this, one of the people we asked was Peter Capaldi. And he said yes, but then couldn't do it because the dates clashed or something like that. But he said, the only reason, when we first asked him, he said, well, I don't know, because if I do an animation, does that mean I can never be in proper Doctor Who? And Russell went, no, Of course you can. And he went, oh, I'm such a big fan of Doctor Who. And I thought, yes, you used to be a member of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society. I remember you as a member of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society. And that's, you know, he then ended up in Fires of Pompeii because Ross was like, wow, an actor of Peter Capaldi's stature wants to be in Doctor Who. Let's get him. And that then got him back for Torchwood.
Yeah, who is spectacular in Torchwood, right?
Possibly the best performance on television this year, I think. That bit, no one will ever stand outside a bedroom door and listen to gunshots ever again.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Torchwood, amazing. I did half a series two of Torchwood as a script editor and loved it. And I'm so jealous I didn't do series three. So jealous of Brian because he got to script edit and associate produce series three of Torchwood. And I'm like, I wanted to work on that because it was so brilliant. So fantastic.
It was dark. Let's wrap up our interview then, being that we have more beverages to have. So we want to thank Gary Russell for joining us today on Doctor Who Podshock, giving us...
It's been my pleasure.
...so much time.
Absolutely brilliant.
And we'll see you... are you out in Chicago?
I'm probably not, no.
But you are at Gallifrey.
I will be at Gallifrey unless something terrible happens and stops me work-wise, which is unlikely because Sarah Jane will be... April, May again, I think.
And it's a very Sarah Jane-oriented...
Tommy's coming, which is fantastic. And I hope if Tommy comes, I hope that we can then persuade Danny to come with him. And then, oh my God, the mayhem will ensue, because those two together are a riot. Literally a riot. They will bring that hotel to its knees.
Well, you're living the Doctor Who fan dream. I mean, here you are. You were a Doctor Who fan as a youth, and now...
And
today...
nobody... appreciates and knows that more than I do. I genuinely would say I'm the luckiest person on this planet. I work in a great industry, I work with great people, and I get to work on three brilliant shows that are just a lifelong dream come true. And I just work with creative people. There's nothing better in life than working with intelligent, creative people. And I'm so sad that Russell and Julie left, because they're brilliant. But actually, then you sit there and you watch Stephen and Piers, and you're just going, it's different, but it's still brilliant. Genius. It's still brilliant. It's just, it's creative and exciting and thrilling. And I am genuinely the luckiest person on earth. If anyone has a better job than me as a Doctor Who fan, I'd like to meet them, because I don't genuinely think they exist.
Yeah. And we're very lucky to have you with us.
Yeah, we're pleased that you joined us. I mean, really, this is a we've been trying to arrange this for a while, actually.
I'm very flattered you asked me.
And
I think you're mad, but I'm flattered you asked me.
And we hope you'll come back, because we want to talk
Absolutely.
About Sarah Jane after it airs, and after the specials, as we can maybe put a bow on the David Tennant era. We'd love to get your thoughts as to after these things air. I mean, I'm sure as a Doctor Who fan, there's a big bubble of excitement inside that you just can't let people
know. Oh, yeah.
Los Angeles, Gallifrey. Really.
There you are.
That's it. So we'll definitely be running into you out in Los Angeles.
Does that mean I have to get up really early on Sunday morning and come down and sit on stage?
You better write it down right now. Put it in your agenda.
It's not really early.
This is all the drawback for me at Gallifrey. Sean always tries and finds things for me to do early on Saturday and Sunday morning, because I'm a complete teetotaler, so I don't drink. So I'm never going to have a hangover. I'm never going to be the one sitting in bed going, oh, I can't get up this morning. And it's so unfair, because he goes, ha-ha, who can I always rely on to be there at the crack of dawn?
Well, for those that aren't, for our listeners that have never been to Gallifrey, we should mention that you're not just a guest there. You moderate a lot of things.
Always
Q&As.
I love that. Yeah. I've done that all my life. You know, all my Doctor Who fandom life, I have done interviews at conventions. I've been an interviewer. I've been an MC. I mean, most of the British conventions in the sort of 80s and 90s, I would usually MC. I love that. I love interviewing people. If someone is interesting, if someone's got something to say on any subject, I can sit and talk to them for an hour and a half.
And an intelligent interviewer as well, because you have your facts, you have your knowledge, and you don't ask just the regular questions that we hear over and over.
I always think a good interviewer in that situation at a convention is someone who actually listens to what they're saying and asks a question about what they just said. I never in my life have ever gone on stage with a piece of paper with questions on. If I ever see an interviewer do that, I think, oh,
it's a good thing we don't
you
do
don't know
it.
What you're going to do. You haven't got a clue, so you've got a crib sheet.
We're really not prepared, or we're really into that philosophy. So,
did you know that David Tennant's going to be in Dream Quest?
That's funny you mention that. See, if I only would have written my facts down, I would have known that by now. Well, again, Gary, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be right back on Doctor Who Podshock.
So that was the conclusion of the Gary Russell interview that we did last month, and we're here right back at the scene of the crime, pretty much at the Peculiar Pub in the Manhattan, in the village.
Well, in all fairness, we were around the corner at the Cuban place.
We were around the corner, but then we gathered here afterwards. It's hard to believe it was almost a month ago. It was,
time goes by.
Too quickly. So I hope you enjoyed that. We're back with Jules and Wendy and Ken and myself here at the Peculiar Pub at the DWNY meetup.
Thank you. See, now you know we were at the Doctor Who meetup. A 15-hour podcast.
That's it's only 14 and a half hours.
That's the other Barnaby Edwards.
Oh, it's a budget version.
Yes, yeah. It's the edited down version.
Excellent.
You have to pay extra for the extended version.
It will be in HD today, yes.
And in full color.
And in full color,
yes.
So we just finished our interview with
Gary Russell,
and so now you've officially heard my not knowing that David Tennant was in Dreamland.
Oh, he's in Dreamland?
That's what I said.
It's
I now know. Stop the emails. I'm up on it.
Well, just to fill you in, Jules, and
TV Land.
And TV Land, anyone that... Well, obviously, if you listen to this podcast, you've just heard it already. But in the interview, we speak... Gary Russell was director of Dreamland. So,
the animated
film. So we did this whole interview with him, and then at the end it was revealed that... I don't know how it came about, where you had brought up whether or not David Tennant would be in it, and he said, yes, of course he's in it.
I just honestly, you know what, so much attention was paid to the fact that George Moffat was cast to be in it, that I was so focused on that, and I guess maybe I just glossed over the news reports and didn't understand that it wasn't a spin-off thing that was actually going to be with David Tennant as the Doctor, so I was like, wait a minute, David Tennant's in it?
And then just days after our interview, then it was
all
released.
All the news released.
Yeah, then the media was just flooded with all information about Dreamland.
Big
who was
still
in
of
it.
David Tennant with the sonic screwdriver in Dreamland, so I'm like, of course, that would I sound like I. What do you mean? This guy doesn't know David Tennant's in Dreamland. Anyway, so, that's the background on that story.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're wrapping up this episode of Doctor.
Wrapping it up. I got some wrapping paper, and Wendy has a bow for me to put on it.
Well, as always, we wanted to thank Gary and Barnaby Edwards, and of course Jules and his new bride Wendy. And let's
cheers.
Get one more round. Cheers to you guys. And we'll
good
be
health and long marriage and happiness. Congratulations.
And we'll see you on an upcoming episode, I'm sure. We'll look forward to...
I have hopes of being exterminated next time.
An exterminated
next time. Really.
Well, Mr. Moffat, you heard it here. Jules Burt is available. Ring him up. He can play a photographer. He can play anything you want. He's available. His credentials are there. Check out Rise of the Cybermen and Age of Steel.
All right, we'll see you guys next time on Doctor Who Podshock. Remember, feedback@podshock.net is the email address.
Gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net is the web address.
Fantastic. We'll see everybody real soon. Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, that concludes this episode of Doctor Who Podshock, which is pretty much all has been recorded on location, pretty much all at the same location, give or take a block. Around the corner was the Cuban restaurant, which we interviewed Gary Russell at, which was an outside cafe area that we had to ourselves that afforded us some, outside of the traffic noise of New York City, of course, some quietness. The pub atmosphere, even though it was early on and before the jukebox started up and before the live musicians showed up, we had some relatively quiet time in the pub, but even that with the Doctor Who NY meetup being there were lots of noise and commotion there, and you know, recording there with an omnidirectional microphone wasn't the best suited for that atmosphere there. So, but we tried to squelch the background noise as much as possible. I realized that the pub recording probably was hard to listen to, and we do apologize for that. But we do once again want to thank Gary Russell, who, by the way, is celebrating his birthday, actually at the time of this recording right now, at the time that this is being released, it will probably have just passed his birthday, being Friday, the 18th of September. So we do want to wish Gary Russell a very happy birthday, and thank you once again for being on Doctor Who Podshock. We look forward to having you back on the show again with us, Gary. Also to Jules Burt and his lovely new wife, Wendy Burt, of course, who joined us at the pub, who are visiting New York City. They're in town on their honeymoon, so we wish them all the best, and congratulations, of course. Remember, you can follow all of us on Twitter and I'll do the rundown here. My Twitter address is twitter.com/LewisTrapani. You can follow, even though James Norton wasn't on the show, you can follow James Norton at twitter.com/JamesNorton. James will be returning next time. Ken can be found at twitter.com/KenDeep. And Jules Burt can be found at twitter.com/JulesBurt. And that's JulesBurt. And of course, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock on Twitter at twitter.com/Podshock. And Gary, to the best of my knowledge, isn't on Twitter yet. But maybe soon. You can join us in between shows at thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. Both will get you to the same place. Once again, thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. See you there. Hey, it seems like every time I turn around, there's a new Doctor Who podcast out there or a blog site about Doctor Who. So if you're serious about podcasting and new media and blogging, next month is the Blog World and New Media Expo. I will be there. I hope you will be as well. If you are, be sure to say hi to me. You can find out more information. You can go to arttrap.com. That's arttrap.com. Read my blog there. I have a entry there, 5 reasons to attend Blog World and New Media Expo. And also there, you can click on a link for more information for Blog World and to make reservations there. It's in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's next month, the 15th through the 17th of October, 2009. Hey, if you're an iTunes user and you enjoy Doctor Who Podshock, go to the iTunes store and find us there, Doctor Who Podshock, and leave a review. Again, that's going to wrap up the show. See you next time. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This Art Trap production is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by donations from listeners like you. Have you donated today?
No, they call me the Doctor.